Okay, so we're in Genesis 46, and let me feel under here in this flea market for my remote. There it is. And so I have lots of cool stuff to show you. Well, at least I think it is. I think it's cool. And we'll see. I guess we'll take a vote afterwards if it was worth your time. No, we won't. And so Genesis 46, and we'll start in verse number 1. It's good to have John Lancaster here from the back. Thanks for being here. And then Patrick, who's been coming to church here for a couple months. Wave at everyone, Patrick. And he'll be, I'm going to baptize him in December when his family's in town, but he's been recently saved. Let's see, I don't think the Hoaxamas have been here before, have they? No, I don't think so. Maybe. No, I can't remember. And then let's see, are any other visitors? So Ryan, where are you at? Where did you move to? Ryan Williams. Last Sunday, he's moving to Fort Sill. So if you spend any time at Fort Sill, don't tell him anything bad. Just good things, okay? And give him all the hints where you get all the cheap rippet and all the other good things. And so anyway, yeah, all the good restaurants, Jim, do you know where they are? I'm sure there are other good things there. All right, there's a Walmart deli. Okay, all right. So Genesis 46. Israel took his journey with all that he had. So who is Israel?
Jacob.
Yep, his new name. With all that he had, and came to Beersheba and offered sacrifices to God of his father Isaac. Now let me just move on with just. So what if he came to Beersheba? You know, when was the last time he came here? Well, let's take a look here. Look back at Genesis 28. Look at Genesis 28. And when I say 28, of course, I mean 29. And verse number 1. Yes. And just to remind us, the last time that we see Jacob in Beersheba, he is running from someone. Verse number 1, Jacob went on his journey and came into the land of the people of the east. The question is, from where did he depart? I mean, that's a fair question. And the answer is that his father was dwelling in Beersheba. Let me locate that real quick here. I had the passage written down.
And verse 10.
Say it again, please. 28:10. Thank you, sir. Yes, thank you. Jacob went out from Beersheba and went toward Haran. And chapter 29, verse 1 is when he actually gets to Haran. And so the last time he was in Beersheba was some time ago. How old is Jacob in today's episode? He is on his way to where?
Egypt.
He's on his way to Egypt. And we know he gets to Egypt at what age?
130.
All right, so Jacob is 130. And so had he any children when he left Beersheba? Had he any wives? Let's start there. No. No, he didn't. He wasn't married yet. And we know that it has that Joseph is approximately how old?
39.
So we know that Joseph was born when Jacob was 91. And then we remember that he was with Laban in Haran for about how many years? About 14 years by the time Joseph was born. So you're about 53 years since he was in Beersheba. About 53 years have passed since chapter 28, verse 10. Now, can I assure you that he has not been back to Beersheba since? No, I cannot. I can only tell you that this is the author telling us. This is the first time the author tells us that Jacob has been to Beersheba. Clearly, Israel is not that big. Clearly, in 53 years, especially since they've been in Canaan proper for a good part of that, minus 20 years with Laban. So 33 years he's been in Canaan since Laban, okay? We know this. Could he have been to Beersheba since then? Yes, he could have been. There's no question about that. I know he could have been. Beersheba is down here in the south. Let's see, right there. At the end of that arrow right there. Okay, so they came in from Haran up here in the drywall, crossed Succoth there, spent 10 years in this area. So we know that there was plenty of time for them in that 33 years since he came back from Laban. There was plenty of time for him to be in Beersheba. But why in chapter 46, verse 1, are we now, why is the author Moses now going through the trouble of telling us he's at Beersheba? And look what he does in verse 2. God spoke unto Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. He said, here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. What is one possibility? What do we see happening in both of these situations? Why Moses is skillfully telling us that now Jacob is back in Beersheba and he's meeting with God. Come on, throw it out.
That's where God has spoken to him.
Yeah, in chapter 28, verse 10, he's leaving Canaan. And what's about to happen again? About to leave Canaan again. It's that I don't know that there's anything deep or mystical or spiritual about that, but I just wanted you to see that every time that Jacob takes a sharp departure from Canaan, he leaves from Beersheba and God meets him there. Now look at verse number 4. God told Jacob, I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again. And Joseph shall put his hand upon thine eyes. Now, what is strange in that verse? I will bring thee up again. What does maybe Jacob not know, or what could he possibly get out of that promise from God? I will take you down to Egypt, and I'll bring you up again. We know the end of the story. How does he come up? Yeah, he comes up in a sarcophagus or in a casket. All right, he comes up in a box of bones. He dies in Egypt.
He's talking about the nation of Israel.
Sure. Yes, he's talking to him about not only him, but his genetic potential.
Right.
Yes, and that's about as churchy as I can say it. All of those who sprung from his loins. There you are. All right, so they're talking about him and his progeny. Verse 5, Jacob rose from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried Jacob their father and their little ones and their wives in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to carry them. And they took their cattle and their goods which they had gotten in the land of Canaan and came to Egypt, Jacob and all his seed with him, his sons and his sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, and all his seed brought he with him into Egypt. So let's see right now. We're about to go into a list from verses 8 through 27 that is not comprehensive.
Right.
I need you to see that. And then just imagine that I have a marker up here, okay? And I'm going to write 66 and 70 and 75 up there, okay? Just imagine that. It's up there. It's nailed down for you, okay? But I want you to see that the daughters, most of them are not included in the genealogy, okay? Or not the genealogy, but the list of the people that come with him to Egypt, okay? So his daughters, his sons' daughters, and by the way, their wives. All right, so, but notice please that he's talking about all those that are included in the seed of Jacob. So, naturally, why are not the wives of neither Jacob nor his sons involved with the list we're about to read? Because they are not Jacob's seed. Okay? They came from other families. Thank God. All right? Verse 8. And you almost have to say that in Genesis, you know? All right, verse 8. These are the names of the children of Israel which came into Egypt. Jacob and his sons. Reuben, Jacob's firstborn. The sons of Reuben, Hanak and Phallu and Hezron and Carmi. Now, Hanak, does anyone have another name there instead of that one? Because it is the same Hebrew word as Enoch. And if it's the same Hebrew word as Enoch, and it is, it's the fourth Enoch you'll find in the book of Genesis. So there's one that is the direct son of Cain. Wow, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. And if it doesn't, we all know what happens to markers that don't work here.
So, it does. Good. All right. So we have... thank you very much. So we have four Enochs. We have one that's a direct son, I think, of Cain. And then we have one that is known as the seventh from Adam. Jude calls him this. And that's the one that's really famous. He's the one that didn't die. He was translated, changed, and we assume taken right to the side of God. That is really cool. I mean, it really, really is. And he lived 365 years and then didn't die. All right. I'm sure in those 365 years there are times when he wished he would die, but he didn't die. And then there is this one, and there's another one in the book of Genesis. So anyways, and then the sons, verse 10, of Simeon, Jemuel, Jamin, Ohad, Jachin, Zohar, Shaul, the son of the Canaanitish woman. And this is the second Shaul and the second Zohar in the book of Genesis. So these are pretty common, and there's no need to think that if you find two of them, that they're the same guy. For example, Zohar, one of the sons of Simeon, is the name of the father of the man who sold the plot of land to Abraham to bury Sarah in. So he's a Hittite. So it'd be very hard to imagine that Abraham's Isaac, Jacob, Simeon, Zohar, that's what, a great-grandson? That's a great-great-grandson, is selling land to his great-great-granddad. Okay, so there's no need to think these are the same people. See how weird that would get? Okay. All right, so in verse number 11, the sons of Levi, Gershon, Kohath, Merari. By the way, this is just great proof here that none of these can be mistaken for women. None of them are daughters. Gershon, Kohath, Merari are later on in the book of Numbers are males. Yes, Debbie? Let's see here. Let's see. I think we at least we know that Joseph knew he had a brother. So that means Benjamin was born before Joseph was sold into slavery. We know that much. So it has been 22 years since Joseph was sold into slavery. So Benjamin is at least in his early 20s at this time. Yeah, he worked quickly. So he probably, sister, had more than one wife. And how can we blame him? His dad had four, you know. I'm not saying it's right. I had a whole discussion with my world religions class a week ago because, you know, the fundamental Latter-day Saints, we spent a week talking about them. They're the Mormons that actually do have polygamy. And I said, you know, you got to do more than just say Abraham had more than one wife. I mean, that's description, but it's certainly not a command that everyone has to. Joseph Smith said it was in the 1840s. He said that he was given the covenant of Abraham, which included plural wives. In 1890, the president of the Mormon Church said it was outlawed. Of course, he did it out of political expediency because the U.S. government was going to abscond all their property. Right. And some Mormons left and went to Hilldale, Utah, and Arizona City, Colorado. And they existed there as polygamists until 1935 when they separated from the LDS Church. And they became the FLDS at that point. And their proof is, well, we're supposed to have plural wives because Abraham was a recipient of the covenant of God and he had plural wives. Yeah, but we don't have a command anywhere in Scripture that says, thou shalt have more than one spouse. Instead, Jesus tells us in Matthew 19, from the beginning it was not so. God made them male and female and they became one flesh. The two, said he, will become one flesh. So something happens when you include someone else in that relationship. You have a brand new one flesh situation, and so it is not God's plan. And I know you weren't even going there, Debbie, but I wanted to make sure that is not sure that we've covered that already, and I want to make sure we cover that. We're not saying that God said, hey, it's a great thing to, Benjamin probably had five wives by the time he was 24. No, he doesn't say that anywhere. It's just a fact. It probably occurred. Okay. So we're now in verse 12, and the sons of Judah, Ur and Onan. What do we know about them other than they were in Genesis 38? Yeah. Amen. It even says so in the later part of the verse. You're exactly right. Ur and Onan, Shelah and Perez and Zarah. Ur and Onan died in the land of Canaan. The sons of Perez were Hezron and Hamul. By the way, you might notice that Hezron was the grandchild of Judah. Verse 12 says so because Judah's son was Perez and Perez's son was Hezron. And you might notice he was probably named after his first cousin, one generation removed. Verse 9, one of the sons of Reuben is Hezron. So you got two dudes in the same caravan with the same name. So that must have been popular. Hezron, and two guys turn around and look. All right, verse 13, the sons of Issachar, Tola, Phuva, Job, and Shimron. And by the way, that is not the same Hebrew word as the Job of the book of Job. So I already chased that rabbit. You don't need to. Look at verse 14. And the sons of Zebulun, Sered, Elon, Jelil. These be the sons of... Oh, by the way, Elon is the second one in the book of Genesis. The first one, like many of these, are found in the genealogy of Esau. And remember, this it's not terribly realistic to say that these are offspring of Esau. They spent a lot of their time away from each other. Esau was in Seir, remember that, S-E-I-R, which is in current-day Jordan. And Jacob spent a lot of his time in Shechem. So while it's possible that some of these people are the same ones mentioned in Genesis 36 in Esau's genealogy, just be careful before you connect dots that are really not connections in the Bible. All right? Verse 15. These be the sons of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob in Padan Aram, and his daughter Dinah. All the souls of his sons and his daughters were 30 and 3. So basically, you just read about all 6 of the sons of Leah, and it equals basically, we're told, 33. And then the sons of Gad. Now, you're going to find out that Gad in verse 16 and Asher in verse 17 are the sons of Zilpah. Why is Zilpah mentioned right after Leah? It tells us in verse 18, she's mentioned because she was a gift from Laban to Leah. She was a handmaiden. So it's not that Zilpah, the handmaiden, is more to be favored than Rachel, who's mentioned next. It's that Zilpah was part of the relationship with Leah. That's all it is. So anyway, verse 16. Stay with me. We'll be through the names here in a minute. This is good work. Somehow this is profitable for doctrine, reproof, correction, instruction, and righteousness. Right? All scripture is given by inspiration of God. We see that. So this is profitable. So I don't feel it. You'll feel it just a minute when we're done. All right? Verse 16. The sons of Gad, Ziphron and Haggai. That is not the prophet Haggai. He doesn't live for another millennia or so. Shunai and Esbon, Eri and Iridai and Irali. Okay? See, remember, the trick to all this is to hurry through the names before some smart aleck corrects you. Verse 17. The sons of Jasher, Jimnon, Ishua, and Isuai, and Beriah, and Sarah, their sister. So some of the sisters are mentioned. And the sons of Beriah, Heber, and Melchiel. All right? So we have some of the sisters mentioned. We see that. We see the daughters mentioned in verse 15. We see sisters mentioned in verse 18. And let's see. She bare, verse 18, these are the sons of Zilpah, whom Laban gave to Leah his daughter, and these she bare unto Jacob, even 16 souls. So we have 33 and 16. Okay, that's pretty easy. And let me see here.
Taking my functioning marker, 33 and 16 so far is 49.
Excellent. Okay. Now, look at verse number 19. The sons of Rachel, Jacob's wife, Joseph and Benjamin. Unto Joseph in the land of Egypt were born Manasseh and Ephraim. That's key there. In the land of Egypt they were born to him. Which Aseneth, the daughter of Potiphar, a priest of On, bare unto him. We already talked about that back when she married him. And the sons of Benjamin were Bilhah and Bechir and Ashbel and Gera and Naaman and Ehi and Rosh and Muppim and Huppim. Okay, they must have been twins. Muppim and Huppim. That's my second favorite set of twins. Remember our favorite, Doug? Remember them? The great nephews of Abraham, Huzz and Buzz. That's right. So, all right, so Huppim and Muppim. I can't help but think about the Muppets when I think, yeah. I mean, I'm sure that's where, what's his name? Something Davis is, no, who was it? Huh? Jim Henson, thank you, yeah. Davis was the Garfield guy, wasn't it? I don't know. Or was it the Star Wars guy? Anyway, so that was George Lucas. Shame on me. Ehi and Rosh, Muppim and Huppim and Ard. Who got the name Ard? He was all tired. Kid number 10, Ard. All right? That's very... So anyway, Bilhah is the third one in Genesis. And, okay, so... And then there's all kinds of these people. He's the third one in Genesis. One is a king in Genesis 14, and one is in Esau's genealogy. So remember, there are many of these same people, same characters. Verse 22, these are the sons of Rachel, which were born to Jacob. All the souls were 14.
So we have 14, and now we're at, oh my goodness, 63, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Lord. All right, hopefully this works out. I hate being embarrassed with my math, but typically it happens up here. All right, good. Thank you, Jesus. All right, so now look at to verse 23.
The sons of Dan, thank you, Dan, Husham. All right. Thank you so much. All right, verse 24. And the sons of Naphtali, Jahzeel, and Gunai, and Jezer, and Shalem. Now, by the way, why is Rachel mentioned after Leah? Yeah, it's just in the order of the marriages, right? And so it's Leah and Rachel. And since Zilpah came with Leah, she's mentioned after. Since Bilhah came with Rachel, she's mentioned after. Because remember, who had their children first, Bilhah or Rachel? Yeah, Bilhah did. So it's not in order of their births. It's in order of their marriages and the handmaidens being paired with their, well, with their owners, to be frank. Verse 25, Frank's not in here. Verse 25, these are the sons of Bilhah, which Laban, I was beating you to it, Mike. These are the sons of Bilhah, which Laban gave unto Rachel, his daughter, and she bare these unto Jacob. All the souls were 7.
7. All right. So now we're at 70. Woo. All right. So, we're going to see that in just a minute here. So all of them were 70.
Now, verse 25. No, we already. Verse 26. all the souls that came with Jacob into Egypt, which came out of his loins, besides Jacob's sons' wives, all the souls were 66. So we're told over here in Genesis 46 and 26,
we are told that it equals 66. What four are not to be included by this description?
No, he came into Egypt. He was born from Jacob's. So he fits. What four people, let's think about the description, came out of his loins, which Joseph did, and he came into Egypt. So Joseph should be a part of the 66, and he is. But we have 70 that we've counted. And we're told there's 66 that both came into Egypt and were born of him.
So the two that died.
The two that died, Ur and Onan, they died in Canaan. And who else? Say it again. Ephraim and Manasseh. It's true, they came from Jacob's loins, but they did not come into Egypt. All right? So they are involved with the 70 that we counted in our tally, but they are not involved with the 66. But look at the next verse. And the sons of Joseph, which were born him in Egypt, were two souls. All right, there it's 68. And all the souls of the house of Jacob, which came into Egypt, were 70. Now, here's the thing. You're like, well, holy cow, we should have 68, not 70 then, because Ur and Onan don't fit that description. But Hebrew is kind of weird, just like Greek is. It doesn't work like English. If you, let's just put it this way. Typically in English, it's pretty simple. You have subject, verb, direct object, or indirect object, or predicate nominative for you geeks. All right? So you have this noun, verb, noun sort of order. But in Greek or Hebrew, it can be noun, 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 verb, and it just depends on the importance they want to place on the word depends on where it's placed in the sentence. And you can tell what function it plays based on its case ending or stem. Really nerdy. I just want you to know that in Hebrew, what this verse could say is, all the souls of the house of Jacob, which came into Egypt, in other words, which came into Egypt, could describe Jacob. And all the souls of his house were 70. Which would be true then, because Ur and Onan were of his house, even though they didn't come into Egypt. But if which came into Egypt describes Jacob, well, he did come into Egypt, and so you have a total of 70 that were of Jacob who came into Egypt.
Right.
And so 70 is fine. There are not two missing people. And by the way, you have to understand the skeptics, if there are some skeptics in the room that say, that's not, I don't want to play like that. It says witch, that's neuter. It's not witch in every translation, I would suspect. And number two, I just want to point out, it is quite the indictment on a very learned Egyptian / Hebrew by the name of Moses to say that he couldn't count.
Right.
All right, so I think he knew what he wrote. I think he knew what he wrote, okay? So this number includes these four boys who were born of his loins, and Jacob himself came into Egypt, and that's in 46:27. But it gets funner. Okay? So let's look at Acts chapter 7. Yes, sir.
I'm just assuming for clarification, Joseph already counted, even though he was taken into Egypt as a slave.
Well, he didn't go into Egypt. Right? He did go into Egypt. He wasn't born in Egypt, so yeah, he was part of. He's definitely part of the tally when we were down here with Rachel's. So we counted him in the 7. No, 14. Yeah, 14. Yeah, because Benjamin had 10 kids. So if we counted him, Joseph was a part of that. Because you have Benjamin and his 10, that's 11. And you have Jacob, Joseph and his 2, and that's 3.
So
plus 11 is 14.
It's not a clarification of who went with Jacob. It was who was in Egypt.
Yes. All right. Acts chapter number 7. Let's look at verse number 1. Acts chapter 7, verse 1. That's a good question, sir. So, you know the story. Please don't try to figure out the context. You'll find yourself all the way back at the beginning of chapter 6 if you try to do that. Take my word for it for just a minute and just know that this is a deacon who is now preaching. A preaching deacon. And yes, I've already heard the argument about whether or not he was a deacon or not. We can play nice and talk about that afterwards if you're not sure, okay? Just these are not the droids you're looking for. Verse 1. Then said the high priest, are these things so? And Stephen said, men and brethren, fathers, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham when he dwelt in Mesopotamia, before he dwelt in Haran, which is, you know, it's Haran. It's just the English equivalent of the Greek translation of the Hebrew text equivalent. Verse 3. And said unto him, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred, and come into the land which I will show thee. Then came he out of the land of the Chaldeans and dwelt in Haran. And from thence, when his father was dead, that's Terah, he removed him into this land wherein he now dwell. And he gave him none inheritance. This is a sermon being preached in Jerusalem, by the way. And he gave him none inheritance in it. Abraham didn't get any inheritance, not so much as to set his foot on. But he promised that he would give it to him for a possession and to his seed after him, and when as yet he had no child. And God spoke on this wise, that his seed should sojourn in a strange land, and that they should bring them into bondage and entreat them evil 400 years. And the nation to whom they shall be in bondage will I judge, and God after that shall they come... Forgive me. And the nation to whom they shall be in bondage will I judge, said God, and after that shall they come forth and serve me in this place. And he gave them the covenant of circumcision. So Abraham begot Isaac and circumcised him the eighth day, and Isaac begot Jacob. Jacob begot the 12 patriarchs. Please notice, all 12 sons are called patriarchs. And the patriarchs, moved with envy, sold Joseph into Egypt, but God was with him and delivered him out of all of his afflictions and gave him favor and wisdom in the sight of Pharaoh, king of Egypt, and made him governor over Egypt and all his house. And there came a dearth over all the land of Egypt and Canaan in great affliction, and our fathers found no sustenance. But when Jacob heard that there was corn in Egypt, he sent out our fathers first. And the second time Joseph was made known to his brethren, and Joseph's kindred was made known unto Pharaoh. Then sent Joseph and called his father Jacob to him, and all his kindred, 75 souls. Oh, God! A third number, right? And so, let's see here, Acts 7:14. Now, let me just give you, the critics love this. They don't even keep, the Bible doesn't even agree with itself. You got one number in the New Testament, one number in the Old Testament. And this isn't a big deal until you're like me and you believe that the Bible is without error. Right? And that's a big deal, right? You still want to have a good answer. And at the same time, not deceive yourself. And so you think of good explanations. You think, what are possible explanations? One explanation, Stephen's wrong. You know, one explanation that he's as wrong as chewing gum in the choir, right? He's just wrong. Wrong. And that he just didn't know his Bible. Well, the fact that it gives a number in Genesis and it gives the same number in Exodus, and then Stephen is given a pretty good account here of the history found in Genesis and Exodus, I'm going to assume that because he was filled with wisdom and the Holy Spirit in Acts chapter 6 to be selected as a deacon, I'm going to assume he got the number right somehow. So there are some explanations. One explanation that I don't like very much is that in the Septuagint, it does say 75. What is the Septuagint? Well, rumor has it that there was a translation of the Old Testament made in Alexandria about 200 BC called the Septuagint, which means the 70. That it is a Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, and they got some things wrong. And Stephen is preaching out of the Septuagint. And rather than confusing the people by giving them a detail that is correct out of the Hebrew Bible, he gave them a detail that was secondary, that was incorrect, out of the Bible they knew. That's one explanation. I mean, does it really matter if it's 70 or 75 and Stephen wants to make a point? Well, I guess the biggest problem I have with that argument is that there is a Jewish scholar who lived in Alexandria about the time of Christ named Philo, P-H-I-L-O, who never cited, ever quoted from the Septuagint. Now, if you don't have any idea what I just said in the last minute, don't worry about it. The point is, I don't like that first explanation. There are other explanations. The difference between 66 and 75 could be what? Wives. Maybe 9 wives. So we're not saying that all the wives were still living. We're not saying that all the wives took the journey. It could have been just simply the 75 Stephen counted for was the wives. Because notice, he doesn't say they came from his loins like it says in Genesis. Just says they're part of his kindred and they came with him. So, where would he get this information? There's plenty. The Midrash, the Talmud, there was plenty of information for him. Plenty of sources for him to get that additional information. We don't have to think that the only information he had was the Pentateuch. So, that is a decent explanation of why there's a difference in numbers. Now,
Pastor, I don't want to get off on a rabbit trail too long, but it's just interesting in this passage that Stephen was, if he was part of the deacons, he was called because in the passage before it says that they are to choose men of good character and full of the Spirit. But remember, the average person did not have any of the scriptures in their hand.
That's
any
true.
Of the scriptures they learned came from their Hebrew school or from their own learning or going into the places where the scriptures were kept and studying themselves. And so Stephen had to have been a pretty astute student to give the details that he did in this passage just from standing up and speaking before the chief priest. And it's interesting that he was willing enough to make these details without any notes in front of the people that should know what he's talking about.
Right, so is your contention that he might have made a mistake here? Or your contention that there's no way he made a mistake?
That's right.
Okay.
Plus, it's just amazing to me to see how Stephen was a man that knew his scriptures, even though he didn't have a...
Yeah, well said. So, in case you didn't hear, because I was busy distracting you with paper, think about this. Probably Stephen didn't have a copy of the Pentateuch at his house.
That's right.
Probably wasn't a copy on the toilet, a copy on the dashboard in the back of the car, a copy in his rucksack, a copy in his desk at the office. Okay? Probably a lot of his studying was done at the synagogue.
Right.
And he had a great deal of students' habits, discipline.
Yes.
And knew these figures. I remember it's quite the indictment to say that a man who had 39 books to study didn't have his figures right. So there's a better explanation other than Stephen was just an idiot.
Right.
Okay? So don't let the skeptics intimidate you. There's no need for it. Just look at the letter of the text and see what it says, and there's probably a good explanation. Now, what you're receiving in your hands, hopefully, will be more than fodder or scratch paper for the next phone call. If it turns out to be that way, fine. But it may be a handful of you will find this useful. There are people that would say there is no chance that the children of Israel numbered millions when they came out of Egypt. For example, you look at the back page, look at the bottom quote, you'll notice that here's a guy that I read. Notice footnote number one there. He wrote a New American Commentary on the volume of Exodus. And he said, notice the bold lettering there. If you don't have it, please find someone and look at it. There is only around 5,500 fighting men for Israel. Well, in Exodus 12:37, under which this note is found, it says there were 600,000 fighting men. There's quite a difference in those two figures.
Right.
You might notice at the bottom of the paragraph, it was a few tens of thousands, but almost surely not several million. These are evangelical authors telling you that what your Bible says isn't really what it says. Just wanted you to be aware of that. Now look at the front page. This is going to be a little tedious, but we have 10 minutes to work through this. So how many years do we have to get from 75 souls in Egypt? I went with 70, so maybe I'll fix that later. How many years do we have to get from 75 to several million? Adam Clark, in his commentary that's about 100 years old now, says that there were probably over 3 million people in Egypt, or in the Hebrew nation, Exodus in Egypt. Let's see, let's review how many years take place between this journey in the 130th year of Jacob and the Exodus. How many years take place? Well, we start with the 430-year thing under number one. You can look at this later. I don't want to get bogged down there. I want to be able to explain this to you. And number two, Isaac is 60 when Jacob is born. That means there's 370 years between Jacob's birth and the Exodus. And then Jacob is 130 during this migration. So 240 is the number you get when you take 130 years of Jacob from 370 years between his birth and the Exodus. Bottom line is 240 years to go from 70 or 75 to over 3 million. You still with me? All right, so here's what I did. If you can think of a more exact way to do it, fine. I gave so much fluff here, there's no chance that I'm overguessing it.
Right.
So let's just look at number one. Let's suppose that a reproducing couple only had a child every 4 years. Highly unlikely in that world.
That's right.
Every 4 years. That's what I'm going with here. You might notice the years go 10, 14, 18, 22. So they're only having children every 4 years. Okay. We're getting about twins. Number two. We're going to reduce the number of reproducing couples by 33% because of aging and infertility. So eventually you're going to get too old to have children, even if it is only every 4 years. That desire will soon leave you. And some honestly just can't have children. So I think reducing by 33% is a pretty good stat. If you think that maybe infertility rates were higher back then, help me out. If you think that the birthing window should increase the 33%, let me know. I think you're going to see it won't hurt the bottom line very much.
Right.
Number three, I'm going to reduce it again by 33% because of early death or the fact that some are simply not old enough to be married or bear children. So that's pretty awesome. Right there, right away, you know, they're only having children every 4 years. We're reducing the number of childbearing couples by 33% because they're either too old or they're infertile. And we're going to reduce them by 33% again because they die early or they're too young to have children. And then number four, we're just going to wait 10 years just because. Just because I want to. Just to show you how possible this is. You can see the numbers. For example, look at year number 98. There are 7,600 people. 3,800 reproducing couples. I reduce it because of age and infertility. You have 2,400 reproducing couples. I reduce it by 33% again because of two couples that don't exist yet because they're too young to marry or because of early death, and you have 9,200 people. 1,600 new people plus the 7,600 other people from the previous 4 years, you have 9,200 people. That's how you read it. Flip the page. Look at year number 150. You have 47,500 reproducing couples. Reduce it by a third because of age and infertility. You only have 32,000 reproducing couples. Reduce it by a third again because of people not being old enough to marry or early death, and you only have 22,000 reproducing couples. Remember, it's been 4 years since any of them had children. Now you have 117,000 people. Look, year number 194, you break a million. Year number 206, you break 2 million. Year number 218, you break 3 million. Year number 222, I did this yesterday, you break 4 million. And we're not to 240 yet.
Right.
And they didn't have any children the first 10 years. Now, that's pretty conservative.
That's right.
So it is more than possible. And if you think, now that's bunk, then help me see it. I'll admit, I'm not an actuary. You know, I don't even know how to work Excel. That's why I rounded all the numbers starting about one. But I rounded them down. All right? So I rounded them down. Kind of like my, in year 90, I think is when I started rounding them down. It's kind of like my students in world religions class. Can I have partial credit? Yes, you can have 0.1 and I'm rounding it down, you know, to zero. So anyway, I always like rounding. Any questions about this? Any problems? Now look, I got my pen. If you see any issues with it, tell me now or else email me, especially if you're not getting the prayer request from Brother Dick. Yes, Florence? Handmaidens. Let me take that in consideration.
Well, the bottom line is you don't even need to because the point
exactly.
is that
yeah.
there were
That's
multiple,
a good point.
Multiple millions that probably came out of...
And then you also need to take into consideration it's more than this because he only mentioned one of his daughters.
Yeah.
That whole number said
Yes, I think that there are a couple other areas where it talks about sisters. Yeah, so you're right. Dinah is one of the few women mentioned in the 70. But yes, you're right. So not all the females. So in other words, we may have more than 70 from which we start. And they might have actually been able to have children on year 4 or year 5. I start on year 10. So all of a sudden they get to Egypt and they don't want to reproduce. You know, I don't know what is in the water. That's just a scenario I'm posing. Anything else?
I figure Pharaoh ain't upset enough to go through 7 plagues over 25,000
Ten plagues, right.
You know, over a small slave force, one.
Right.
Two, it was a fairly significant slave force that he had building out there. They also survived the killing of their sons from Pharaoh when Moses was around. And then there's that whole snake and earthquake thing during the Exodus. If you were only 27,000 on the start, and you were out there doing your thing, and you killed off a chunk of them.
Yeah, we're told in 1 Corinthians 10, 24,000 died.
Right. So you got a real problem with that when you start showing up in the presence. promised land is a fighting force that makes people quiver, and you're down to a few thousand left, that doesn't really work.
Good point. Great point. If you start messing with that number, you got to mess with all the other numbers. Luke?
At what point in the 240 years did Pharaoh start killing off their male children?
Good point. I need to take that into consideration. At what point were the male children being killed? Now, let's look at Exodus 1 for some clarification there, and let's see what the writer Moses says about that. Great point.
I mean, Abraham had darn near that many when he showed up the first time, and they kicked him out after the first downfall.
Right. Okay, so he's not saying Abraham had 3 million. He's saying Abraham had the thousands he was posing just a minute ago. If you had 319 fighting men in your house, I think it was, then he probably had at least 1,000 people in his caravan. And that was Genesis 14. Good point. Genesis 13. All right, so look at Exodus 1. You'll notice in verse 5, it gives us the same number. All the souls that came out of the loins of Jacob were 70. All right, so verse 11. They did set over them taskmasters to afflict them with their burdens. Verse 12, but the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and grew. So in some regard, it looks like that it had the opposite effect, and then they made their lives bitter. Verse 15, the king of Egypt spoke to the Hebrew midwives, and their names are Shiprah and Puah. I'm glad we're a little bit more creative now. But he said, you will kill, verse number 16, you'll kill the sons while you watch the Hebrew women deliver them. Verse 17, but the midwives feared God and did not as the king of Egypt commanded them, but saved the men children alive. So Luke, I will grant to you that probably some males were killed, because certainly this is speaking in generalities. But because it's speaking in generalities, I would say it probably doesn't affect the conservatism of this scenario. What do you think?
No, I agree. It was just a thought.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. And I think I'll make a footnote here about the male children. And it looks like it may have had an effect at first, but probably after a while, that scheme did not work at all.
Well, in chapter...
And not only that, but lots of daughters were born, too.
In chapter 1, verse 12, you read, the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied. So now you have to have a plus adder.
Right. Yeah. Oh! I'm going to go back and add a logarithm. All right, so... However you do that in Excel, so... All right, well, any other comments or questions?